Hey there. Glad you tuned in to the Green Divas Radio Show. I'm Green Diva Meg, your host for the next almost hour. And I don't know about you, but it's a little wintry here. I mean, it is February. I'm trying to think of things that will be a little bit inspiring, a little hope for summer kind of thing. And there's a poem on a bench that I have downstairs with this painted garden scene. And it's a piece of a poem by John Greenleaf Whittier. And I thought I might read that. Maybe it'll make me feel better. I don't know about you, but here we go. It was a happy thought to bring to the dark season's frost and rime. This painted memory of spring, this dream of summertime. I don't know. I liked it. Thought I'd share it with you. There you go. So before I launch into the awesome lineup for this show, I wanted to let you know what's being featured right now on thegreendivas.com. We have a post from Mom's Clean Air Force, 10 things you need to know about natural gas leaks and storage sites. There's an infographic, real-time CO2 counter. It's scary but important information, folks. Jenny G. Perry did a great post for us on 7 days to living a stress-free life. Yes, please. There's a nice podcast that goes along with that. Annie Leonard shared a post with us, 2 climate action trends to watch for in 2016. And this is part of our new Greenpeace GDs series. There's a podcast that goes along with that as well. We have Green Devo, also known as Green Dude, Mike Novak, who does a great recycling rant, as only Mike Novak can do. We have a Green Divas Foodie Files with Diana Rice from Meatless Monday, who offers some great ideas for Meatless Valentine's Day menu. Oh boy. Green Divas Green Thumb with Megan Kane, the creative vegetable gardener, the first in our 3-part series on winter gardening prep. This one's on seed catalogs. Then we have Green Divas at Home with Lisa Berez of Ron and Lisa, the Healthy Home Dream Team, on indoor air quality. Our feature this week, I had a chance to speak with Osprey Oriel Lake, who is the founder of WECAN, which is Women's Environment and Climate Action Network. We talked about Indigenous women who are on the front lines of climate change. So there's a lot in this show for you. Hope you'll find something that inspires you and makes your week a little warmer, maybe a little greener. I don't know. Enjoy.
Clean water is the most precious commodity on the planet. And since the average commode uses between 2 and 5 gallons of fresh water per flush, maybe there's a better way to not waste our waste. More after this.
There's nothing like hot dogs on the grill, but as a mom, I have to be concerned about quality. That's why I buy Tallgrass Beef Hot Dogs, 100% grass-fed beef, nothing artificial, gluten-free, and voted #1 in taste by New York Magazine. If you want to give your family a great-tasting hot dog and one that's good for them, then your choice should be Tallgrass Beef Hot Dogs. Easy to buy online at tallgrassbeef.com or ask for them at your favorite supermarket. Tallgrass Beef Hot Dogs, the healthy alternative. Buy them online at tallgrassbeef.com.
Up to 30% of fresh, clean water is used in our homes for the toilet. Composting toilets are becoming more popular, which are installed in the bathroom. They look just like regular toilets, but instead of flushing, they recycle waste on site by evaporating the liquids and converting the solids to a fertilizing soil, which is perfect for uptake by plants, giving a new meaning to the term growing our own. Something John Crapper could have never imagined when he became famous for modernizing the flush toilet in the 19th century. I'm Bill Curtis, and Earth Matters.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva Foodie File.
Oh, I have missed this woman, one of my favorite foodies, Diana Rice, who is the registered dietitian of the Meatless Monday campaigns. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
I'm good. I missed you.
I missed you guys as well. It's been so long.
I know. So I think we have a fun topic today. We're going to talk about how to have a meatless Valentine's Day.
Yes, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah.
A lot of possibilities. And now Valentine's Day is a Saturday this year, you know, so it's not necessarily going to be a meatless Monday, but I know that a lot of people are out there, you know, wanting to eat less meat overall, or maybe want to encourage a partner or a date to eat a little less meat. So I'm going to give you some tips on that.
All right.
So, you know, what I have in mind is just, I think a lot of people on Valentine's Day, perhaps, you know, if you've been with someone for a few months, if it's your first Valentine's Day together, you want to do something special, you want to cook them dinner, you want to have them over for, you know, a candlelit dinner for two in your home or apartment. You can always go out to eat, but of course, you know, reservations, and then get booked, and with it being on a Saturday this year, I mean, I don't even know if there's time left to get ready.
Yeah, right. You're by the time you hear this, you'll be out of luck.
Right, and I'm such a big fan of cooking at home, and there are so many possibilities. But if you did want to keep it meatless, you know, because, you know, what comes to my mind, I mean, I know what my husband wants to eat on Valentine's Day is steak, right?
Yeah, right. Steak is sexy, not.
Yeah, so, you know, I just want to give the listeners some options on, you know, how to have a meatless Valentine's Day, and, you know, maybe how to have a meatless Valentine's Day that your partner won't even notice if he or she doesn't happen to be.
Oh, it's totally possible. It's totally.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, meatless food is sexy.
Absolutely, and there's some really good options. So the way that I'm thinking about this is, you know, I mentioned steak. What is the steak of meatless eating? What is that, you know, meatless item that you probably aren't going to splurge on, you know, every day, but for a special occasion, such as Valentine's Day, it's totally worth the splurge, right?
Right.
So I have a couple of suggestions, and we definitely have recipes that feature these ingredients on meatlessmonday.com, or, you know, you can just hit Pinterest or Google and see what else pops up. But what I recommend doing is, you know, I shop at Whole Foods from time to time, but I get my basics. You know, it's actually not all that much more expensive if you're just buying canned beans or whatever.
Right.
But they sell these, you know, these specialty items that, you know, I just try and walk right past most of the time because I'm on a budget. But, you know, things like, you know, blood oranges. Or we have a recipe for a blood orange fennel salad on meatlessmonday.com, which is just really nice with some walnuts and avocado, actually. It's just a really flavorful twist on a salad. Another favorite, of course, is mushrooms. I always buy the white button mushrooms if I'm doing a stir fry or something. Don't even want to see the price tag on the other ones.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, if this is going to be a special dinner, you know, get the chanterelles or the morels and do like a risotto, you know, like it gives it such flavor. And it's, you know, mushrooms are one of those ingredients that, you know, it's who needs the meat when mushrooms are involved?
Exactly.
You know, umami. You know, another one is splurging on some fresh pasta.
Yes.
You know, people make pasta at home with, you know, if you've got a little attachment or whatever for your KitchenAid. But there are plenty of specialty stores, whether it's, you know, a Whole Foods, or maybe it's like a corner or Italian market or something that's making fresh pasta. And of course, it costs more than like the $1.99 blue box, but it's, you know, there's such a difference. And pasta can be the foundation of so many meatless meals. And then there's just some other, you know, seasonal produce items that are a little bit more on the end, like rainbow carrots, you know, like the purple carrots. It's so beautiful roasted. We have a recipe for that on the website. Endive, you know, you can make little tizers using it as a boat with, you know, various meatless things. It's a great little appetizer. I just recommend people specialty market and, you know, whatever you would have spent on steak, and I know that can be like $18 a pound or something, just put that same money towards your veggies and, you know, see what you come up with, because I bet you can come up with brilliant.
Yeah. Definitely. Oh well, I'm pretty inspired. I'm like making notes here. I'm like, oh yeah,
right. Yeah,
ooh, yeah. I'm inspired. Well, and as always, you will share some recipes with us.
Yes, of course. Yes, all the recipes I listed and more.
Yay! Thanks, Diane. I hope you all have a wonderful Valentine's, a yummy, healthy Valentine's.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's thegreendivas.com. Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, you know, it's never a dull moment with one of our very favorite Green Dudes, Mike Novak. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Megan. Happy 2016. This is going to be the best year ever.
I'm laughing because we just had a hilarious conversation about how kind of tired we both are of hearing that, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's always going to be the best year.
You know, for all you dudes and dudettes out there who are saying that, get real, okay? we're going to heck in a handbag. Everybody knows it, so let's just cope, all right? That's what we're going to do. We're just trying to
cope.
Wait a minute.
Is heck in a handbag like a Midwestern thing?
Have you never heard that?
Well, I've heard of hell in a handbasket, but heck in a handbag, no.
Well, it's a variation on a theme.
The polite version. Okay.
I think it is. I know you've got kids listening to this show, so I'm just trying to be really circumspect.
That's the
opposite of what I meant. Whatever.
So you wanted to – the topic today we thought you kind of wanted to rant a bit about some recycling stuff.
Well, you know, I'll rant about anything you want me to rant about. The reason I chose that is because in Chicago, they got new rules, right?
Uh-oh.
And I know that, you know, you're all over the, you broadcast and podcast all over the world, but, you know, my base is here in Chicago.
Gotcha.
And anybody who knows anything about Chicago knows, A, this has not been a good year for the city.
No.
And B, it has not been a good couple of decades for recycling in the city.
Tell me why it's not been a good year for the city in general. I'm just curious because I don't know. I'm not from Chicago.
Oh, don't you read the newspapers?
No, I don't. honestly don't.
With school closings and no money and Rahm just jacked up the taxes for everybody. You know, you own a home, you're going to be paying more. And, of course, we got videotapes of people being gunned down in the streets and people calling for his resignation. And
really?
You know, it's kind of pretty crazy here right now.
In fact, I just watched a video today while we're taping this. I don't know when this will air, but while we're taping this, Obama just signed some executive orders about gun control, right? And he was just...
Right.
Live announcing it, and he started to cry because he was talking about the kids, Sandy Hook.
That's what I heard, yeah.
And he said, after a moment of literally tears coming down his face, he said, and by the way, this happens every day in the streets of Chicago. I was like, oh, does
it? I heard that quote.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, dang.
Well, you know, it happens every day in America.
Yeah, it does.
On the streets of a lot of cities, okay?
Yeah,
it's not just Chicago.
All right, but he called out Chicago.
Particularly, what?
He called out Chicago, man.
Yeah, he's from Chicago.
I know,
maybe he's making a point.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But so it's, you know, and here I am. I'm the dude who likes to talk about environmental issues and gardening.
Yeah, right?
You know, people being shot in the streets, and you go, hey, let's plant some potatoes, you know?
So, all right. So now I got a picture of what's going on in Chicago. But talk
about
what have they changed with the recycling just to add, you know, icing to this bummer cake?
Well, remember I said it's been a couple of bad decades for recycling in Chicago, meaning that the city has been trying to figure out, and actually for about 25 years, it's been pretty bad. Ever since Richie Daley came in, and by the way, I it's a shame he's gone because my nickname for him was Richie the Deuce. I'm not sure he appreciated that. But
did you get to tell
Richie
him that?
The Deuce.
Did you get to tell him that to his face? Is what I want to know.
No, never did get a chance to do that.
Okay.
But I did it on the radio, so all you had to do was tune in. He could have heard that. But I don't think he was listening to my show. You know, Richie Bedu starts things off with this thing called Blue Bag. And if you're not from Chicago, you don't have any idea what I'm talking about, which was, short story, they had this system for recycling, and I'm using air quotes here, where you threw all of your recyclables into this blue bag, and then you left it out back.
Okay.
And then the city garbage workers came along and threw the blue bags into the trucks along with the garbage, and then smushed it all down, and then they took it to transfer stations and tried to separate out some recyclables. And they claimed that this was a system that could work. And
really?
they did it with a straight face. And it took the Chicago, and I've been a member of the Chicago Recycling Coalition for about a decade. I was president up until last year. We fought this for 15 years. Or I couldn't get the city to understand that this did not work. So finally Richie gets this idea, well, you know, maybe it's not working and we'll have blue carts like everybody else in the whole rest of the world has. Can you sense I'm a little wound up here? And so they finally roll out the blue carts starting in about 2007. 2008 hits and the bottom of the whole economic world falls out,
yeah.
And so they have to suspend that. And so they don't. So it takes them, you know. Then the Rahm becomes mayor, and they finally get it done. What was it? 2013. So it took them 7 years to get all the blue carts out to 600,000 homes in Chicago. And then they forgot to tell people little things like, you know, if you put your recyclables in plastic bags and then put them into the blue cart, that's going to gum up the works. So, big news this year, you know, and by the way, this is something that at the Chicago Recycling Coalition, we've been telling people for a decade, please don't put plastic bags into the blue carts because it'll gum up the works. Big news,
yeah.
Chicago says don't put plastic bags in your blue carts now, and that's the big change at the beginning of the year, a change that should have been, oh, I don't know, rolled out when they rolled out the blue carts.
Yeah.
You know, because we all knew that this is a problem. And now they go, hey, you shouldn't do that. Well, first of all, people have decades of assuming that anything they put out for recycling or garbage or whatever should go in a plastic bag. We have so trained people, we have just melted their minds into believing that if you throw anything away ever, it doesn't matter what it is, put it in a plastic bag.
Isolate it in a plastic bag so that it doesn't bother all the other garbage.
Or contaminate you know.
Contamination.
You might die.
Yeah. Yeah.
If there's an apple core in there and you touch it the wrong way, your skin is going to explode. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, when you're a kid and you think that the floor is, hot lava, right? And you can't touch it because you're going to die.
Yes. I thought I was the only one that did that thing.
No, my grandkids were doing it, and I thought, OMG, they still do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what City of Chicago did is they hired a company to set up a new website for them. And I really can't argue too much about that because it's actually got good graphics. It's called, and this is in other cities as well, it's called Recycle by City. And you can go to recyclebycity.com.
Okay.
And what they're trying to do is bring in a bunch of different cities where you can go to one site, you click on your city, and right now they've got Los Angeles, Santa Monica, and West Hollywood. They've got Chicago, Austin, and Houston, Texas, and Philadelphia.
All right.
And there's a good, and I think, and I don't know who this person is. I actually want to interview her. Her name is Tracy Bugh.
Okay.
B-U-G-H. And I just sent her a request to link in with her on LinkedIn.
Okay. It all happens on LinkedIn.
Another one. What?
It all happens on LinkedIn, I'm telling you.
Yeah, well, you know, what happens on LinkedIn is if you don't know the person, if you're honest and you say, do you know this person? And I said, no, I don't. And then yeah. It blocks you. It says, well, you can't send her a request. So I lied and said, oh, yep. Yeah, I know her. We've worked together.
We all you do know, that. Like,
what,
we all
do that.
What do you
expect us to do?
I know.
Of course, but it's so stupid. I mean, LinkedIn, get a clue. Just get a clue, all right? Like we have these standards because people can't possibly network unless they know each other. Well, then how do you network? That's
yeah.
See, I'm everything's kicking me off today. That's part of the problem. So anyway, getting back, Recycle by City is actually kind of a cool thing because you can click on your city. In this case, I click on Chicago, and it tells you what you can recycle and what you can't recycle.
Okay.
That's a residential guide. And they do it in pictures, which should have been done decades ago. We've had these lists, but you really need pictures. People understand pictures.
But it also
reminds you of just how much cannot be recycled.
Still,
and
yeah,
it makes you crazy.
Yep.
Why are we still making bubble wrap? Why haven't we changed the packaging of potato chips? Why? You know, what are we doing with clothing? Nobody recycles. They throw it away. I see people up my alley throwing away perfectly good clothes, and I go, have you ever heard of the Salvation Army?
Yeah, right. There's somebody that can
Goodwill?
Use that jacket or those jeans or whatever.
Coffee cups. You know, Starbucks is trying to recycle its coffee cups. There was this study done in Canada by, I think, the CBC, and they tagged the coffee cups.
Wow.
And found out they were ending up in landfills.
Oh.
And so Starbucks, and they did it at Starbucks, but they also did it at Hortons.
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons, and of course you can hear them beeping as they back up and say, "Oh well, we're working on that sort of thing." What the conclusion I've come to, and the reason I said we're going to heck in a handbasket is, or did I get that right?
No, it was heck in a handbag. Yeah,
there we go. Heck in a handbag. I don't even know what my own phrase is. Is I'm finding out that here we are in 2016. There's still oodles and oodles of stuff we can't recycle, and nobody seems to be really working on it. We're still figuring out, trying to teach people the basics of recycling, which we should have done 50 years ago, okay? And it makes me angry. It makes me angry.
Yeah,
and
rightfully so.
It makes, it's just like, I don't even know what to say to, you know, and then you got people like waste management. You hear the waste management CEO going, you know, it's really not that profitable. It's like, I don't care.
Yes.
I don't care if it's not profitable to you.
Yeah, right.
Everybody's got an excuse. We're so full of excuses and no solutions. So, you know, when Chicago takes a baby step forward, I go, okay, that's good. I'm glad you're doing that. But because I've been following this for so long in the city of Chicago, I laugh. I just kind of laugh at them and go, okay, really? That's the best you can do? Okay, good. Knock yourselves out.
Well, you know, there is an organization, and I can't remember the name right now, and I should have looked it up, but a national organization that's trying to put together a standardization for everyone so that whether it's in your municipality or it's in your town, so that garbage bins have certain labels and people understand this is compostable, this is recyclable, this is trash. You know, it seems kind of fundamental, but people are still vastly confused about it all.
Well, yeah, and you actually hit on my concern is that why don't we have national standards on this? We have national standards on a lot of things, but it doesn't do us any good. You know, some people would say, well, if those states' rights people would probably say, well, each state should have, don't even go down that road, because we produce the same stuff nationally. So there should be a national, there should be an international standard, actually.
Well, so now
how to recycle stuff.
We have to do a post to follow up with this and use this Marvel's rant to, and by then I will have figured out and remember the name of the organization that's working at this. And they actually had some celebrities doing PSAs to talk about why we need to, you know, be more aware.
I would love to know, because that's a person I want to talk to. I want to talk to somebody in that organization, maybe even join that organization.
There you go. Know? See?
So I tell you what, if you find this out after we finish this phone conversation, I don't care if you tag on 10 seconds with the the name of the group, if you find it, and
okay.
The website or whatever. And of course, you got to let me know what it is as well.
I will. Well, Mike, it's always good to talk to you, and I'm sorry that those Chicago recycling people are pissing you off, but then again, you're motivated, and we all need to be aware, and we need to make, you know, we need to step it up, because this stuff is just not going away. Garbage is not going away.
No, it's not, and we need to, you know, a lot of it is kind of put in the laps of the consumers, and it should be. Need to be, as consumers, more aware of what we're buying and
right.
what the ultimate disposition of it is going to be. So it means if you've got that greasy pizza box, which they say cannot be recycled, well, guess what? It can be composted.
Yeah.
Why aren't you composting it?
Yeah.
Why aren't you shredding it and composting it? And I know why, because most people don't even compost.
Yeah.
And that's another story that needs to be investigated.
Okay, so we'll
talk about on it.
We will rant about that next time.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Whatever.
Mike Nova.
All you did is get my, you know what, Megan, you got my blood pressure up. Now
I'm so sorry.
Go work it off.
I'm so sorry. All right. Listen, people, pay attention, and we will talk to Green Dude Mike Novak soon. You can find out more at MikeNovak.com, correct?
Net.
Net, sorry.
MikeNovak.net.
All right. Check it out.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to TheGreenDivas.com. That's TheGreenDivas.com.
Wishing you had a green thumb, or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert Green Divas and Dude Gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips.
Well, you know, it seems like it's the wrong time of year to be thinking about gardening. I know, but it's not. This is the time to plan. And those of us who are gardeners, like, get kind of itchy to get planning and playing. So I'm really happy to be talking today with Megan Kane, who is the creative vegetable gardener. She's a garden educator, writer. She's got a blog, creativevegetablegardener.com. And happy to be talking to Megan today about some of these things we can be doing now in the winter months. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Meg. I'm happy to be here. My garden is actually being covered in snow right now. It's snowing here in Wisconsin, so
yeah.
I'm excited to be talking about gardening on a day like today.
Definitely. So we thought we'd talk about seed catalogs and why we want to kind of plan ahead and order some seeds, and give us a little bit on that.
Yeah, so I'm a really big proponent of garden planning, and I don't feel like it needs to be difficult, but I do think there's some things that you should do to prepare yourself for spring, because one thing I think that happens to some people is that on the first sunny day of spring, they rush out to their corner hardware store and load up a basket with a bunch of seeds and not necessarily thinking ahead or planning. And I love my corner hardware store, but not for seeds and plants, because often they have pretty generic varieties that aren't necessarily suitable for the area that you're in.
I know that I am one of those people that has in the past like run out, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't find any organic seeds. And then by the time I find them and order them and whatever, I'm like, you know, running late or they're not available.
Right, exactly.
And for me, just to throw it out there, and I think for many of our Green Diva, Green Thumb gardeners, or Green Dudes, you know, planting non-GMO seeds, organic, heritage, whatever you want to call them, the non-GMO ones are pretty important to a lot of us.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it's unlikely that you're going to find those kinds of seeds at a big box store or even potentially at a local hardware store.
Right.
But there are some, there's lots of companies, seed companies that focus on non-GMO and organic and heirloom varieties. So what I suggest that people do is order seed catalogs to get delivered to your house. And it's so fun to go out, especially on a day like today when it's all snowy at my house, to go out and open my mailbox and I have these bright and colorful seed catalogs that start to get me really excited for spring. And so it's a nice winter ritual at our house to make a cup of tea and snuggle up near the wood stove and look through the seed catalogs and kind of start to dream about our garden in the spring. And then it also allows you to take a step back. It's hard to make strategic decisions when you're standing in front of the seed rack at the hardware store. You're kind of in a rush. But when you allow yourself some time to look through these seed catalogs and to think about your garden last year and then this upcoming year, then I feel like you make more thoughtful decisions for your garden.
Right.
So then the follow-up question most people ask me is, well, where should I order seed catalogs? And certainly you can shop online from all of these places. I do a lot of stuff online, but I still like to hold the seed catalog in my hand. So you can either request it to be mailed to your house, or you can just look through their website and figure out your seed order online.
But I
really like High Mowing. They're all organic. They have lots of great varieties.
Have you ever used Seeds Now?
I have never. Do you order seeds from there?
Yeah, I have ordered seeds from there, and I was very happy with the quality. And, of course, they're all organic, non-GMO certified, you know, seeds.
Okay. I'll have to put that on my list. Yeah, there's so many seed companies out there. And so the fun thing is over time you kind of, I think, find your favorite three or so.
Yeah.
I do recommend that people don't go out and order 10 catalogs because I find that once I have more than four or five, I start to get overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
So I'd start with two or three, but, you know, they sell your name, so eventually you get more and more.
Yeah.
But some that I like are High Mowing, Johnny Seeds, a lot of organic CSA farms order from there. They have they have a lot of hybrids, and they do have organic seed. I love Seed Savers Exchange.
Yes, yes.
Which is in Decorah, Iowa, a really great place, and they have a great mission of saving lots of heirloom varieties. And then I actually love the Hudson Valley Seed Library as well.
Wow.
Which is run by a guy that used to be a librarian and now has a seed company.
Oh, that's so cool.
So those four are four of my favorites. I would say pick two or so. Look online, see which ones seem like a good fit for you, and then order them and get them delivered to your house. And then that's a good first step. If you want to figure out what your other steps are, I think some people don't really know what they should be doing to plan their garden. I actually have a free 10-step guide that I created.
Oh, cool.
It's called 10 Steps to Smart Spring Planning. And folks can find that at creativevegetablegardener.com/planning. And it takes you through 10 steps you can do to plan your garden for the spring.
Well, and I know we're going to talk on a couple of more segments upcoming, but seeds seem to be the first thing because you can order them, get them, and then you can start planting the babies inside, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's in Wisconsin, where I live in Madison, I start my first seeds at the end of February.
Yep. So
and
now,
so if you live
time.
In a zone that's warmer than where I live, which is 5A, you'll want to start seeds even earlier than that. So, yeah, you want to get your seeds ordered so that you can do one of the next steps, which is to start them at home.
And I know Megan will give us a nice post for thegreendivas.com. In the meantime, you can look at her website and let's get started with the seeds. Yay!
All right.
Look forward to talking to you more soon, Megan.
Okay, thanks, Meg.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Diva's Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Moose were hunted almost to extinction in New England during the 1800s. Careful population management resulted in these majestic animals making a comeback. But now, wildlife researchers are concerned that moose populations are at risk for another reason. Shorter winters have upset the ecosystem's delicate balance. With snow on the ground for fewer months, more deer are surviving the winter.
Our deer herds have been increasing, bringing more brain worm, which does kill moose.
That's Christine Rhines, a wildlife biologist with the New Hampshire Department of Fish and Game. In addition to brain worm, the deer also carry winter ticks. A shorter winter with less snow means more ticks survive to breed and feed. Deer have evolved behaviors to groom the ticks off. But moose, which have never had to deal with ticks before, just ignore them.
An individual moose can have over 100,000 ticks on them. So literally, they suck these animals dry of blood, especially the calves. They are dying of severe anemia.
As the climate continues to warm, Rhines and other wildlife biologists are concerned about how the changes will impact moose and other wildlife in the region. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home.
Yay, we're on again with Lisa Barris of Ron and Lisa, who are the Healthy Home Dream Team. Lisa is an author and an expert, a certified green building professional, among many other cool things. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. Great to be here.
Yeah, so I think we're going to talk today a bit about indoor air quality, and as the seasons begin to change and we start looking like we're going to be inside a little bit more, this is a good topic to talk about.
Oh, so important going into the fall and the winter, because we do spend more time indoors, and we can be having symptoms of poor indoor air quality, which could include headaches, fatigue, difficulty concentrating, maybe you're having irritation of the eyes, nose, throat, and lungs. These are some of the issues we can have if we're being exposed to toxins and pollutants in our air.
Yeah.
And today we have 25 million Americans that are suffering from asthma and 65 million with allergies.
Wow. And so, right? And it's, so you can't just blame the trees for everything.
Right, exactly.
Or the grass.
There's indoor allergens and there's outdoor allergens. And we need to take, you know, get a handle on our indoor environment. A lot of people find when they remove some of these issues, they don't have to take their allergy medication anymore. So, you know, taking a look at our environment where we spend so much time is key. And I'll go through a couple really easy steps that everybody can do starting today
okay.
to start cleaning up their indoor air.
All right.
Okay, number one, my favorite tip is to make sure you're using a portable air purifier in your home. It's just essential today. You know, since the 1970s when we've made homes very tightly sealed for energy efficiency, what that did was it trapped in pollutants. So not just biological contaminants that we bring into our home, but
right.
chemicals that come from flame retardants and VOCs and cleaning products and paints and furniture, and the list goes on.
Yeah.
So having a little air purifier, you know, the size of, if you're on a budget, at least get one for your bedroom.
Okay.
And put that in there and run it 24/7. If you've got a bigger budget, get one that can filter your whole home. And those are really easy to find. And I go through, we have a 30-day program where we tell you exactly which one is sort of best suited for you and price points and all of that. In general, you want to look for a HEPA filter, which is a high-efficiency particulate air filter. that'll take out about 99% of the particulate matter in your air.
Okay.
But these can vary. The number one thing is you want to avoid anything that's producing ozone.
Okay.
So a lot of ionic air purifiers generate ozone, which in itself is an air pollutant.
Oh, great. Yeah, so
that's
not
we don't
helping.
Want that.
Not helping.
Yeah, we don't want that. Now, if you're really on a budget, you can actually use plants. And we were just talking about that during the break.
Yeah.
Yes, so plants are great. NASA did a study and found that there are about 50 houseplants that actually work as little mini air purifiers. So in addition to creating oxygen, they also remove chemicals commonly found in our homes like formaldehyde, benzene, toluene, and the list goes on.
Yeah.
And some of these plants would be, say, the spider plant is really good at removing formaldehyde.
Yes.
Yep, the English ivy is great at absorbing benzene. And the rubber plant, which is just a beautiful, great indoor plant, is good all around at removing all the chemicals. Now, it's not going to be equivalent to an air purifier, but it will help clean your air. I think they're great to have on your desk, and especially if you work in an office or in a cubicle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, because, well, it probably helps balance the electromagnetic field a bit, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, nature in general, they show that we are more productive, we're more alert. It actually increases our mood when we are around plants. So not only, I mean, there's just so many benefits. It's kind of crazy not to have them in your home.
And there's some that are pretty hard to kill.
Yeah, well, I'm looking for those, Meg.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen,
I'm on a hunt for those.
It's funny because I'm really good at outdoor gardening, but indoor gardening, it's taken me a while to get into the rhythm and not kill them. And
I know. It's very depressing. I agree. Can do give with some of them. Gerber daisies are great. Those are fun. And they're another indoor air cleaning plant. And they're
really?
So pretty. Yeah, Gerber daisies. And, you know, holidays are coming up. Poinsettias are another one. And
well, except that they're poisonous to cats, and I have crazy cats.
Oh, yes. You do have to be careful with cats. Even peace lilies and the lily family can be poisonous to cats. So...
Well,
very
I have
point,
you know,
there.
I have quite a few Swedish ivy, which really you really have to be kind of a black thumb to kill them. So, and I think they do a lot and they grow well. And I have a couple of other I can't remember the names of them indoor plants, but
okay,
spiders definitely. They're also pretty hardy.
They're pretty hardy. You're right about that. Spiders are great,
but you know, some of it is like let's say I have an old couch that I know. Probably had formaldehyde and all that crap on it, but eventually does it stop outgassing?
You know, that's a good question, and yes, outgassing of these chemicals does taper over time, and it really depends on where it's found and what, you know, what the level is. So like in your kitchen cabinets is where you have a lot of high levels of formaldehyde in the shelving, and that can take a long time to off-gas.
Wow.
So it just depends. I say, hey, if it off-gassed, guess what? You inhaled that. You breathed that in. So, you know, you don't really want to think of it in terms of that. You want to think of maybe opening the windows when
yes.
you have a new home. Really, we want to reduce these chemicals, period, because we don't want to be polluting the outdoor air either.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of, like, it's an older house, so certain things are, you know, I didn't paint the interior. I didn't redo the floors. But when I do those things now, I always use non-zero. I found some zero VOC paint that I love.
Yeah.
Mystic paint.
I mean, every manufacturer now has it. So you're crazy today not to be using low and zero VOC because every major paint manufacturer offers it.
Yeah. Now, if I could afford to, I would buy one of these fabulous organic beds. But I can't afford to do that. I can't afford to replace my bed today. So...
You know, baby steps. I think you and I were talking about that as well.
Yeah.
Take everything in baby steps. The bed is one of the biggest investments. You do get what you pay for, but it is an investment. So if you've got that air purified in your bedroom and your mattress, say, is off-gassing chemicals, then at least your air purifier is going to be absorbing a lot of that versus you inhaling it. So, you know,
like
start with what
so.
You can.
Oh, my God.
But one last thing I want to mention is air fresheners.
Yes.
Which don't freshen your air, and in fact, they pollute your air. They literally mask whatever the smell is that you're trying to cover up with synthetic chemicals.
Yeah.
So I advise using a therapeutic 100% essential oils, and a diffuser is a great way to make your home smell good without adding chemicals. The synthetic fragrances that are found in chemicals today are so dangerous. They can cause watery eyes, headaches, skin and respiratory irritation, asthma, and they can be have allergic reactions. Not to mention, they typically contain phthalates.
Yeah.
Phthalates are endocrine disruptors. They're chemicals that mimic hormones and mess with our hormonal system, and they can intensify asthma and associated with reproductive problems. So
we don't need that.
We don't need that. We don't need VOCs, xylenes, ketones, aldehydes, carcinogens. We don't need to be spraying this in our air. So think about, you know, getting rid of the smell and putting something natural in there.
Yeah. And I know that you have like a million ideas and ways that people can mitigate and, you know, like I said, moving forward, I think, you know, we're going to get a new couch. I'm going to be looking at trying to find one that isn't. And there are people now that are not using the flame retardants that are so highly toxic. And the next bed will be a non-toxic bed. So as I replace things, you know, I'm...
That's right. I think that's the way to do it. And now with the new flame retardant law with furniture, it's easier to get upholstered furniture without flame retardants more so than ever before.
Thank God.
And the mattresses are a different category, so you do have to ask. And really, if you stick with a manufacturer that says we're organic or green, they typically take out the flame retardants and use natural wool or something similar to meet the federal law without exposing you to chemicals.
Well, so there's hope. There's hope for us all.
There is definitely. We're heading in the right direction. It doesn't seem like it sometimes, but we definitely are.
Thanks so much, Lisa. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
This woman, she is all over the world helping women, helping the environment, Osprey Oriel Lake. She is the co-founder and executive director of Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. Yay, I think I got it. It's also We Can is the acronym. And I was fortunate enough to sit for an event, be it an event that she put together at the UN prior to Paris. I was so inspired by her work. And now, this is women all over the world of all, varieties. But one of the things that she brilliantly did was pull together indigenous women who are on the front lines throughout the world. And so this is the topic we're going to hit today. Hi, Osprey.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. I'm honored. And like I said, I was so moved by your the presentation by the women that you had put together for the UN. And I know that you kind of took that on the road. So,
yeah. Yes, we did. We were very honored, and thank you for inviting me to, you know, specifically speak about the indigenous women that we're very, very honored to be working with and supporting. As you know, we do a lot of different work in different arenas, but, you know, for us, highlighting indigenous women is certainly one of our main priorities. And the reason for that is, you know, we want to be sure that their voices are heard, and it needs to be understood in terms of a climate justice framework that Indigenous women and, in countries around the world are some of the women who are the most disproportionately impacted by climate change, and yet they're really central to solutions.
Right.
And so we have found that it's really key to hear their voices.
Yeah, and these women, literally, I was riveted hearing these stories and horrified by some of what's going on. Like, you know, I do what I do and I hear a lot of stuff, but I had not really seen the effect until I really heard it from these women in certain ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think, and this is one of the things that, you know, we were doing in New York. We do it in many countries around the world. And then a big focus for us at the UN climate negotiations was to ensure that, you know, women on the front lines, these indigenous women, can tell their own stories of their own experience and their struggles and solutions, both inside the COP, but also in events that were public events in locations around Paris. And, you know, again, similar to you, you know, people had a really strong, as they should, you know, reaction and response, because there's nothing like really hearing, you know, the stories from the front lines on everything from, you know, the devastating effects of fracking in their communities. Yeah. You know, this is where they're living. Their water is being poisoned. Their children are suffering. There's huge cancer rates to living on the front lines of oil extraction in their territories. You know, people living. We worked with Patricia Galinga, as an example, from Ecuador,
yeah,
to ensure her story is heard about, you know, people living on these traditional lands, you know, living beautifully in harmony with nature, something we should be learning from. And, you know, the oil companies coming in to have oil extraction in their territories and destroying the waterways and the forests. And so, you know, it's really important we hear that, you know, it's a life and death struggle for indigenous peoples.
I think I didn't realize that these women were literally, that woman, Patricia, was putting her life on the line to try to stop these people from going into the forest, right?
Absolutely. And you know, we need to understand that, you know, a lot of these indigenous peoples, indigenous women, are putting their lives on the line to protect their territories, to protect their future. And, you know, in the case with Patricia Galinga and the women we were working with who came to New York, the government was having a crackdown and basically being very violent against peaceful protesters. You know, and they have the right to defend their land in peaceful protests. So we were really supporting them in being able to do that and bringing that forward to United Nations leaders to understand what was going on. So the other part of this that I think is really important to understand is that, you know, they're fighting, as an example, for the health of their communities, but it's not like the borders stop. I mean, climate change affects all of us. So we also recognize that supporting these indigenous women, you know, fighting for indigenous rights benefits all of us. And, you know, of course, we're most concerned about the indigenous people themselves, but we also need to understand it behooves all of us to understand the importance of indigenous voices and indigenous rights in the fight for climate change.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty intense stuff. And when I looked at, like, I've heard about the tar sands, you know, and I've seen the horror stories. But the presentation, and I can't remember the name of the woman who did it, was so hard-hitting that I literally was, like, almost in tears.
Yeah, Malina Labakan.
Thank you.
She's amazing, and she's First Nations up in Canada, and a wonderful, powerful woman who's also working to bring solar to Indigenous communities in the middle of the tar sands. So I think the flip side is, you know, hearing just the tragedy of these stories and understanding these lands should not be sacrifice zones, but also what women in these regions are offering as solutions, you know, from bringing solar to their communities. But also one of the presentations that was made by the Sadiako women and the leaders, men leaders also from their community, is the concept of the living forest proposal. They're also showing really exciting proposals about what we could be doing, including rights of nature, living in harmony with the earth. And I just wanted to tell you one quote.
Yes.
That was from Anna Santi. She's a Sadiako woman. When we were in Paris, she was at a press conference that was held on one of the days that was really speaking out for indigenous rights. And these are much longer stories, so I'm just condensing them. But really powerful action by indigenous peoples in Paris, you know, to put forth their ideas and also to make sure indigenous rights were included in the final operative part of the text, which it was not. I mean, we lost a lot of things in the text, and one of them, unfortunately, was human rights and indigenous rights. But I love the power of Anna Santi coming out of the Amazon rainforest, a powerful woman speaking for her community. And she said, "We women are here to protect life. We women, we can do anything. We are descendants of the jaguar. We put our children on our backs and carry them. We can run through the jungle at night with our babies on our backs.
we can do anything. And this is one of her
power
women. And I just thought, wow, you know, I mean, they are such strong fighters, and, you know, we have so much to learn from them. And one of the key messages they were saying is part of the solution is reconnecting with nature. That can't be seen as something else. Part of the solution to the climate crisis and healing environmental degradation is our deepening our relationship with the natural world.
Well, and I want to encourage people to go to, what is your website?
Our website is www.wecan, W-E-C-A-N, and then the word international spelled out, .org. So it's wecaninternational.org.
Yeah.
And we'd love for people, you know, to come to our site. As you mentioned, you know, we do a lot of work. We're about to start up in March our U.S. Women's Climate Justice Initiative trainings, and it's a whole host of trainings anyone can participate in for free, from how do we get to 100% renewable energy, reforestation, rights of nature, agroecology, frontline communities, and they're very exciting training programs that people can participate in, and so much more.
Wow, I want to do that. I'm going to try to make that happen.
Well, we'd love to have.
I'm so happy to talk to you again. Thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing to help highlight these stories. And I look forward to talking to you again soon, I hope.
Absolutely. I do, too. Thank you for your work in helping to share these stories. And let's be in touch.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.